distribution needs finalizing some legal points, you know, and that we were expecting that it would be done by now, but you know, the lawyers they take some time.
What is the story of Lightship?
The Lightship, you know what the word means? Is the stationary vessel which serves the purpose of the lighthouse. It's really like a floating lighthouse. And obviously those ships were in service until late 1950s. Our story takes place in 1955. And a small crew of such a ship, which is anchored a few miles off the shore, actually off the shore of Virginia, is invaded by three gangsters who are on the run, and they want the captain to leave the anchor and give them a rum. So it's a moral struggle, you know, who wins, and will the captain let
what are they on the run from?
It's very vague. We know that they killed people, they robbed the post office or, you know, something. It's very vague. And during the film, we only discover whom they are and how dangerous they are.
Why that geographic location? Why off the coast of Virginia?
Well, we thought that this location would give us a nice mixture of characters. Robert Duvall, who plays the main gangster, wanted to make use of his wonderful southern accent. He is so great, you know, the way he speaks. I'm unable to imitate it, but it's really, it's like a new discovery in this great actor's amplitude. He's wonderful, he's charming, he's seductive, you know, he plays almost gigolo, you know. Yes, it's such a surprise, you know, when you see his work in this film.
Is he the captain?
No, he's the main gangster. But although he kills in the end, you see him using the gun, you wouldn't ever think that this man is capable of doing anything.
He's with the kids. Is he with the kids?
He is with two brothers, gangsters. Which one is the idiot, played by Bill Forsyth, whom you may know with from Once Upon a Time in America. He's
and
one
where,
of the
where
four.
Did you film it? Did you actually film it?
Well,
off the coast?
No. We, you know, the strategy was such that the water looks exactly the same everywhere. So, what we were looking was we were looking for the usable lightship. And the only seaworthy lightship we find was on the border between Germany and Denmark. And apparently, you know, this ship wasn't really seaworthy. And we had some difficult moments being literally on the sinking ship and therefore metaphorically also on a sinking ship, because the tension on the set was such, you know, that people were really very, very nervous. Well, you know, and we had all male cast, and you know, it was explosive stuff over there. You know, the part of the captain is played by Klaus Maria Brandauer, who is well known in the business for his special character. He's a kind of Mephisto in life.
There's even a bit of a resemblance.
Yes, people say, and So I must say, you know, that the final result, which was after all prize in Venice, and which I'm very happy with, you know, I believe this is by far the best film. It's such a surprise, because regarding the circumstances, this film should be really sunk somewhere deep in the ocean.
We all wish we could see it here.
Well, I'm really frustrated, you know, that it was just a matter of days, you know. We hope that everything will be clear and signed by this morning, but unfortunately it's a matter of, you know, the legal things, you know.
A couple of us were talking about another one of your earlier films, The Shout. I've shown this picture several times to classrooms, and we have a great time trying to exercise some strategies about deciphering a lot of the elements in that picture. Were you in that picture, as in others, do you like to leave room for ambiguity?
Oh,
room,
yes.
For a variety of interpretation.
Especially in this film. You see, the Shout was really based on a very short story by Robert Graves. You know, the story was, I don't know, 8 or 9 pages. You know, we tried to blow it into the reasonable size of the film. But when I experienced trying to tell the story chronologically, it was just too little. You know, there was not enough of, you know, side plots or anything like this. So I had to really make the whole shuffle, you know, in the cutting room. And, you know, that was really the strategy. How much I can complicate the thing still to have the audience being able to follow was the main plot.
Certainly the most sinister cricket match I've ever seen. the idea of a technological apparatus recording and reproducing and mixing sound, as a director who has to work with those kinds of things, you must feel like you could construct a shout heard around the world in some ways.
Yes, that was bit of a mirroring of my own work there, you know, the whole game with the sound. Yeah. By the way, I don't know anything about cricket. You know, for me the game doesn't make any sense. But what I find out, you know, when I had to film it, I was just watching the game, and I would say, what was that? And they say, he just scored 6. So I said, okay, we'll have scoring 6 would be one of our moments of the action. So I didn't really care about, you know, who is winning or what's going on. I just wanted to have the right movement.
As far as acting is concerned, do you deliberately block out time?
It's always a matter of project, mm-hmm. Yes. I never thought really seriously about my acting. You know, I've done some parts, but... well, this one is far the most important work I ever done as an actor. It proved that I can do some acting. So I guess suddenly I'm approached with some offers, you know, for acting, and I'm even tempted to take a challenge. Maybe, you know, once more. But I'm not really planning on a sort of building up my acting career.
You don't consider yourself a director / actor then?
Not yet, no. No.
I love the qualification, though. You're, again, leaving some room open.
Yeah, you see... If something like this part will be offered to when I know that I'll be absolutely confident that I can do it, you know, I probably would take it, because I wouldn't take chances on playing some character which I don't know anything about. When I feel that I can help the film, you know, then yes, I felt the same way helping Volker Schlendorf with the film called Circle of the Deceit, when there was a character which was very much underwritten, you know, there was a part of the photographer who accompanies a journalist in Beirut. And in the script there was just a couple of lines and nothing was really going on with this character. So Volker, who is my friend, asked me, can you do me a favor and try to sort of figure out what this guy could do, and maybe you clown a little bit in the background, make some jokes, you know, just to bring a little bit lighter side into it. And I did it, and that also seemed to work. So as you see, my choices are rather, you know.
Well, it seems as if, with very few exceptions, directors make wonderful actors. Sidney Pollack is just the latest example.
I believe that every director can at least play one or two parts, really, because, you know, they usually try to show something to their actors, you know, a gesture or, you know, the way to say the line. So they have a lot of practice.
Well, I understand that if you want to ask one, that's the problem.
Well, what we thought with Taylor, that this character, you know, what can work in this character is to portray this kind of guy not in the usual way we see it in the movies, as a sort of heavy, simple-minded, ugly guy. So we thought that maybe if there is a certain charm add to it, and certain, I don't know, almost bon vivant behavior, that could help the part, that could make it more human, you know, and more interesting. I don't know what of my own personal characteristics I add to the part. I'm not particularly bon vivant myself, but I try to play it, yeah, maybe a touch of sense of humor I add there from my own experience. You know that you never behave really deadly serious all the time. You know, so whenever I could have a little smile there, a little. I guess, you know, some of them must be. You know, people are different. You know, and. Why they always should be those heavy guys, you know. That was actually the main attraction for me in the part, that it could be played lightly. You know?
What is your status? Are you free to come and go as you please?
Well, I haven't tried since Solidarity. You know, I was there in 1981, and after that I made a couple of films dealing with Polish subject, which of course were heavily anti-regime. So I don't know if I would. I may be persona non grata now there, but I haven't tried to put my feet there.
Do you think that this picture?
I have no idea, you see. Well, again, I think I wouldn't take a risk and and try.
Have you personally traveled in Russia?
I was in Moscow once during the Moscow Film Festival years ago.
Do you think training for filmmakers in England or in America is as full and rigorous as it is in the Polish film school, at least by tradition, as it has been there?
I don't know what is the training here. You see, I never was involved in any activity of a film school or anything like
that. No one's ever asked you to speak either at USC or UCLA films?
Not yet, no.
Hmm.
Yeah. No. Actually, I like to do it maybe one day when I have enough experience. You know, I only, you know, act in one Hollywood film, and I only made my first Hollywood debut with the Lightship. So,
it is true, is it not, that the Polish Film School is to a filmmaker what a Kirov ballet school would be to a dancer? I mean,
in a way, you're right. Yes.
If you could elaborate on that, maybe a little bit.
Well, I was in a film school in Lodz for 4 years, four solid years. I managed to make my first feature being in a film school, because during these 4 years, every student had to make several short films. One supposed to be a documentary, another one supposed to be the use of the long lenses, you know, all the rather technical exercises. But I was making always the same film where I was starring in it, so I had a maybe little bit easier task than anybody else, because I could write my own film and I could act in it, and I was always available for myself. So,
but I mean, it was never just a question of picking up a camera. You had to have training and background in so many other arts and disciplines, including physical disciplines, correct?
Yes. At that time, when I enrolled to the film school, the rule was that the students of the directorial faculty had to be the graduates of the university. So I was already 24, 25 when I enrolled, and I spent like 7 or 8 years in studying many different subjects. I was studying Academy of Painting. I was studying archaeology, ethnography, journalism, history of art. So I had this university education, which doesn't show anymore. You know?
Well, I was wondering if you feel then that you have profited from that wide a background at school. Have you profited from that? Has that?
You see, when you make movies, you tend to really to sort of narrow your horizons. I think I was much more open to what's going on around at that time. Also, I was 20 years younger. So, in a way, when you become really a filmmaker, you specialize so much on your own track. You know, you just read the scripts, you just read the books, thinking how to make a movie about it. You just see the world in a way how to exploit it for the purpose of filmmaking. You are not any longer consumer of life or the world as it is. You just try to find the bits and pieces which you can use in the films, which is a kind of distorted perception of the world.
Well, that's the line about filmmaker sees with one eye.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. How do you call it?
Later.
My experience in this film was a relief that I don't have all that trouble on my shoulder, that I can really concentrate on my limited participation, and I enjoy it. I really had authentic fun being there, you know, without all that headaches of production and.
You weren't tempted to go to Taylor and say, well, now maybe you should try it this way.
Never. which is great, you see. I was, in a way, I was learning even how somebody else is doing the thing, and I stop thinking how I would do it. I just follow his way of making the film, and I brought what I could help him with, and it seemed to work.
I'm sorry, we've got to move. Sorry, we have to. Thank you very much.